Well, good afternoon, everyone. I don't know about you, but it's been the most surreal week for me. Storms, where I work at Baldwin Wallace University, has been off all week. Got a message at 10:30 Thursday night that I was to go back to work Friday morning, which seemed a little cruel, but I have three families, kind of. There's Taya and the children and the extended Graham family. There's the church family, and there's my Baldwin Wallace family where I work. Very close to all three groups. And it may amuse you to know that you are the least crazy of the three. And you know what you're like. So that tells you what the other ones are like. Emily flew to Yale over the weekend to see an Egyptologist friend and was flying out Monday. And of course, where was the storm going to hit the hardest? That area, she, living by luck, got out just fine. Baldwin Wallace people, not so much. Berea was very, very hard hit. As a high school friend of mine pointed out, why couldn't they have hit the high school? Because it was open all week. But the college was closed. And in the history of the college university, it just switched to university, which is why I have trouble saying university. It's never closed for a week. Furthermore, I can't picture 100 years ago that they would have closed for a power outage at all, because there were things near windows, but the buildings are a lot different these days. And it's just the way it is. I am blessed in that I don't have far to go to work. We're a little more than 3 miles between house and work. But in that 3 miles, it's a tough 3 miles, I got to tell you, because the time that I go to work, the school buses are out. And you know what that's like. And school buses are a good thing in concept. I mean, we want them to pick up the little children, and we want the little children to be safe. But one morning last week, the school bus was coming this way, and I was going this way, and I could see the yellow lights on, starting to blink. And it doesn't get any more, clear-cut than this. There's darling little children standing at the side of the road, and to make it worse, there's mothers with them. I mean, we approve of motherhood and little children. They're wonderful. And the bus is coming up, and all I'm thinking is, I have to get to work. So the yellow lights are blinking, and I thought, it's not red. So I zoomed past just at the nick of time, and then I could see in the rearview mirror that the lights had turned red. And I didn't do anything technically wrong or prosecutable. But about a block past, I thought that was a terrible thing to do. Why not cut, of all people in the world, little children and mothers a break and just slow down and wait 15 seconds for them to get on the bus? It wasn't like they were in the house and the bus driver had to go up and knock. They were waiting right there. It would only have taken a little time. And I realized that it boiled down to the battle that we all fight from the time we come out of the womb till the time we're put in the grave. Hopefully not after that. But the battle is the struggle between give and get. We want to get things. I wanted to get to work. Now, if I'd thought about it, I mean, work is work. I probably would have enjoyed a little delay of whatever it was, but I didn't think about it. I just wanted what I wanted at that point, and I zoomed past the school bus. Whereas if the way of give, I would have thought, oh, suffer not the little children to be run over by my car, and let them get on the school bus and wave to the mothers. I've tried to do that ever since. But it's kind of funny, no matter what the battle is, whether it's a political election, whether it's crime, whether it's family troubles, whether it's school buses, it all pretty much boils down to give and get. And I took the trouble to look something up, and I sure hope this works, because usually when I rely on technology, I usually flub it somehow. Now, I am signed in to the wireless, so let's see if this works, because this is something remembering. Okay, turn my volume up all the way, and I'm going to put this by the microphone, and let's see if you remember this.
But mankind in general has not lived that way. They have lived the selfish way. There are just two ways of living.
Why not have a picture?
And I call one, to make it simple, the way of give. I mentioned this when I was here a year ago. The other is the way of get. I want to get everything for me. That's the way most people think, the way they live, the way they act and perform.
And you've heard that before. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. Thank you. That'll be enough. That's fine. He never did respond well to that kind of thing. But that was, and for those of you who may not be aware of it, that was a man named Herbert W. Armstrong. And we always say, well, he wasn't the founder of our church. Jesus Christ is the founder of our church, and that's true. But at the same time, there wouldn't be a church today if God hadn't worked through Mr. Armstrong. And we heard him say that a lot, didn't we? And he boiled it down. He boiled our way of life down to the principles of give and get. And particularly at times when he went around the world speaking to world leaders, you know, he couldn't give them what we call strong meat. He didn't start with third tithe and holy days and things like that. He went with give and get because it was something that everyone understands. Everyone knows that they want to get, and everyone pretty much knows that they want to give. People who don't understand that, we call them psychopaths, and we either put them away or just live next door to them. But we all pretty much know that that's the way it is. It boils down to give and get. Let's turn to Acts 20 and verse 35, and this is the ruling on this. Acts 20 and verse 35, and you all know this by heart, but I just want to make clear which side we take on this. Acts 20 and verse 35, this is Paul talking in a longer sermon. We'll just take this out of context. And in verse 35 of Acts 20, he says, "In everything I did, I showed you that by this kind of hard work, we must help the weak, remembering the words that Jesus, that the Lord Jesus himself said, 'It is more blessed to give than to receive.'" And it's interesting because if you have a Bible like mine that has the words of Jesus in red, those words are in red in the book of Acts. And you don't get a lot of red in the book of Acts because it's mostly Paul talking. Paul spoke in black. Jesus spoke in red, and Paul is quoting Jesus there. Now, we don't have any other record of Jesus exactly saying that, but it fits in with the way that he spoke and the way that he lives and the way he rules all of creation. So we believe it. It is more blessed to give than to receive. And I just want to put it in front of you today that life, the struggle in life is really simple, and it's a battle between get and give. And lest there be any confusion, we're in favor of the give side. That's what we believe. Thankfully, there's more people than us who believe that, too. It shows up in many philosophies and religions. We understand what God is doing and what God wants us to do, and that's what calls us apart. But at the same time, even that is colored throughout by the fact that there's two ways of life. One is get and one is give, and we work to be givers. I actually, and this is totally unlike me, I know, and I don't want you to be too shocked, I actually have 5 points today. I have points, yes. You can write down 1 to 5. And these are just ways, aspects of our life where we have to think about the principles of give and get and how it's always better to give. I do remember one pastor saying, well, one of the reasons it's better to give than to receive is that you have things to give, that God has blessed you. And here in America, even the poorest of us have things that we can give. We don't generally lack the basics in life, and we are blessed by God, and we can give. The first point about how important it is to give is marriage and children and family. If you just want to write down family, that would be a good way to sum it up. You don't have to be married to understand the principles of give, and you don't have to have children. And you can be in God's kingdom and be a full-fledged child of God without those experiences. But, of course, family includes other things than marriage and children. It includes brothers and sisters. It includes mothers and fathers. And there's no one on earth who didn't have a mother and father. They may not know them, but they had them. So it applies to everyone. But, you know, we notice at work, I work with a bunch of musicians, which is probably what puts you in the least crazy category. Musicians come in all forms. Some of them are actually nice, mature, wise people. I have met them. They do exist. And then there's other musicians. Are you familiar with the term diva? It came out of the musical world, specifically from the opera world. And if you want to sum it up in Mr. Armstrong language, the term diva is on the side of get, pretty much. Divas want to get what they want. Now, they feel that the reason they get what they want is they give back to you splendid things, so they deserve to get, which is another way of looking at it. But we don't want to be divas in a family. We want to be givers. And you notice that most of those divas are people who, because of their careers, have not had children or had families. There are some who manage to balance both. But in many cases, they feel that they, women, of course, feel that they can't have a career and have children. And so they forgo the children to have the career. And if they had children, they would understand a whole lot more about not being a diva, I tell you. Because when you are married, not at the instant of the wedding, I mean, you have to learn how to be married, but one of the things you learn in being married is that you're always learning how to be married, and there are always ways that you can give more, and you're not doing it right. There's always ways that you can improve. And of course, when you have children, you cannot be a selfish parent and be a good parent. When you have children, you think about your children, and your life revolves around children. It revolves around children after your children are grown and they're gone. You still worry about them, and you still have an impulse to run their lives, and you still think about them all the time. But you're always thinking about other people. Just because of the way my life is and the things that I do, I was saying to Taya one time, I get contacted by a lot of people, and I do every week. Sometimes it's church people, sometimes it's work, and everybody wants something. Very few people call me, and I have to say that there are people in this room who do contact me when they don't want something. But I'm going on and on. I'm saying, everyone wants something. I'm so useful. I can just be of such service to people. And they call me and they start out by saying, hello, how are you? But I know that they really don't care and they really want something from me. And Taya looked at me and she said, I think you're almost ready to be a wife and mother. And of course, it was the perfect response because husbands may think they're the givers, but it's the wives and mothers who end up with the brunt of it. It's just the way that it is. It's nice of wives and mothers sometimes to make husbands think that they are on the giving end, that they provide so much and all this, but we all know that it's not true, that the way it breaks down is the wives and mothers give even more. So remember that in your marriage, that marriage and family is pretty much about learning how to keep on giving. When you don't want to, it's still the important way to do it. It's important to give in your job. Let's turn to Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10, a verse that you know pretty well. Oh, I get to flip a page. This verse is split between side A and side B. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. And then Solomon, because he was such a jolly fellow, adds, for in the grave where you are going, there is neither working nor planning nor knowledge nor wisdom. In other words, while you're alive, do it right. Paul echoes this in Colossians 3. It's in both the Old and the New Testament. In Colossians 3 and verse 23, and being Paul, he amplifies it and makes it more applicable to our way of life as God's children. Colossians 3 and verse 23. Paul writes, well, it's interesting the context that he puts it in. In verse 22, he says, slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything. This is talking about working, of course, and do it, not only when their eye is on you and to win their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart. Remember the sermon last week? Did you get to hear David Jones' sermon? No one's going to forget that sermon, the three P's, and how he pictured Jesus saying, go out and, clean up some more. We were laughing at Weber's because that's a very West Side topic, and he could be part of us. You know, he was talking about septic tanks, and but he was saying the same thing, that he had a job where the customer wasn't that cooperative. It was about as dirty a job as you can get, and the way he looked at it, he was about ready to quit and do shoddy work. And instead, he said, "What would Jesus want me to do? What if I was working on Jesus' house?" Well, that's an important way to look at it. Even when you're tuning pianos, it doesn't work so well with tuning pianos, which is what I do for a living, because there's no record that Jesus ever played a piano or cared about pianos. But still, you want to give to people, and whatever work you do it extra better. And you know what? When you do such a good job, even when it's unwarranted, you are preaching the gospel. Because people do notice you. You get it in your job evaluation, but you also get it when people around you just are working side by side and they see what your work ethic is, then that you always want to do as good a job as possible. And they may turn to you and say, "Why are you like that? Why don't you be normal?" And you can say, "Because I believe very strongly in a way of giving, that it's the best way to go." There are rewards to it, but also it just makes you a better person. And if, you know, time gets into it, you can talk about God and how he's blessed you. Anyway, you are preaching the gospel. You're making God's way of life plain. And trust me, in today's workplace, people do notice that, and you will stand out. So we need to give at our job. We need to give whenever we're together with other people in the world, and this is where it gets hard. School buses and such, you know. Matthew 25 and verse 31. This sums up a way we need to live, and it's put in very important terms because it's talking, well, let's see what it's talking about. In Matthew 25 and verse 31, red letters, Jesus is talking. Matthew 25, 31. Jesus said, "When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his throne in heavenly glory." So far, so good. "All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left." So this is pretty serious terms. It's us, everyone we know, being divided up. "Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world.'" And this is the ultimate authority talking here. So we believe this. And what does he say that the criteria are? He says, "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me.' Then the righteous will answer him, because they had no idea this was going on, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?' And the king will reply, 'Well, I'll tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me.' And then he will say to those on his left, 'Depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels.' This is not good, in case you're wondering. 'For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison. You did not look after me.' And they will also say, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or sick or in prison, and we didn't help you?' And he will reply, 'I'm telling you the truth. Whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me.' And then they will go to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life." So the divide between give and get is a pretty serious one. Now, I have to say that the people I know in the church are very giving people. I'm not saying this to be critical. I find this church family and other people to be as giving as can be. Tay and I have traveled all over, as have you, and we find that's pretty, thankfully, pretty common in God's people and his congregations. My parents used to say when we would visit them, wherever it would be. And then, of course, on Saturdays, we would take the kids and go to services. And they'd say, well, we won't see you the rest of the day. And we said, well, why do you think that? And they said, because those people are so nice that you'll just stay around talking and maybe you'll go out with one of them and stuff like that. I thought, a little bit disgruntled, are we? But it was kind of true. You know, that's what happened. It got to the point where we'd leave the kids home. When they were little, they preferred to be with grandma and grandma anyway. It was kind of our, you know, our bargaining, and then we would go and come home. But my parents' complaint was that church people were way too nice and we liked them too much, which, that's good. That's wonderful. And, you know, my parents weren't totally serious about it either. But they did notice. People do notice that kind of thing. You know, there's always a thing like, we should be doing church community service, and that's always a good idea. And our church does, throughout the world, do community service. But you should also be doing it on your own, in your own community. If you're not doing community service, ask yourself what your reason for not doing it is. There might be good reasons. I'm not saying that. But people would come up to Tay and me and say, well, we have to get church-wide community service. You know, we have to have projects. And I would say, well, we do community service. We don't talk about it. And our children in high school threw themselves into community service. Our son Dave actually worked for City Year for a year, which was community service. And we were very proud of him. He's the one who made that decision. We were very proud of him for doing that. We know other church young people who have done the same thing, and they do get paid a small amount, but it's community service for a year, and it helped him to grow up and was a wonderful thing. If you're not doing community service, ask yourself why not. Now, I am going to address an explosive topic, and a wise person would not address it at all. I'm on the speaking list, so it's just something you're going to have to settle for, and that is politics. Now, I am not going to take a side. I'm going to offend you all equally when I talk about this, but you know how soaked you are in the presidential election politics right now, regardless of what you think, how you don't even want to answer the phone anymore. I call customers, and they pick up the phone, and they go, hello? And I say, hi, it's Mark Graham, and they say, oh, what a relief. I thought you were Romney or Obama. And, you know, this happened one time in Lakewood. I had a customer, last name was Graham, and the father, Ed Graham, was running for Lakewood. He ran every 2 years there was a mayoral election. He ran every time, never won. But he had great T-shirts that said Graham for mayor. So I said, look, if you give us the shirts, my whole family will wear these. You know, to be smart, Alex, Graham for mayor. Well, we made the mistake of wearing them around the neighborhood and not even thinking what we were putting on. You know, you just put on a T-shirt. And people shunned us and would go get off their front porch and go inside and shut the door. And finally, I realized they thought I was running for mayor. I actually, at one point, there was a catalog I'd lent a customer a block away, and I walked over and went up on the porch, and all I wanted to do was say, I wonder if I could get the catalog back. And I said, hi, I'm Mark Graham. And I got no further. And the guy said, no, 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 and ran inside and shut the door. And finally, his wife came out laughing and knew what was going on. But how much of the presidential election, regardless of what side you're on, how much of it has to do with give and get? Even the terms we use, and please, I am not assigning good or bad to either side in this, but the terms we use are liberal and conservative, and you identify one major candidate with one and one with the other. Well, a conservative would tell you that liberal means freely, and what they do is they give freely. The free part of liberal is associated with giving. They just want to give, 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 bleed us dry till we have no more, and give to people who don't deserve it. That's the great fear. And then the liberals say, well, conservative, you know, the root of conservative just means to keep. And those people just want to amass things and keep it and not share with anybody. And when you think about the basic terms, you're talking about give and get. And God has laid it out very clearly that we have to have Christian godly values, which are based on the Ten Commandments. We have to have those. But I also just read verses that said, if you don't provide for the poor and the hungry and the least of the brethren, if that's not your spirit, then you won't be in the kingdom of heaven, and that's pretty serious. So both sides have a lot to answer for. And again, I'm not trying to cast a preference on either side by doing this. What I'm trying to tell you is that the argument has a lot to do with give and get. How much will you give, and how much do you want not to give? And I'm not assigning right or wrong to it. You notice how careful I'm being? I'm apologizing for every word I say. But when you think about it, it has a lot to do with give and get. We have in politics a saying that I'm sure you're familiar with, quid pro quo. And we call that compromise, and it means this for that. And quid pro quo means that if you give me something, I'll give you something. And that's how we've traditionally gotten things done in the government of the United States. The United States, by the way, one of the reasons that I think it's been blessed is it's always been a giving nation and has led the world in giving. It's not a righteous nation at this point, but it is still a giving nation, for better or for worse. Well, quid pro quo means we give to get. And in some ways, the United States does give to get. You know, we give to get security here or friends here or whatever. But at the same time, we do just give. But quid pro quo is really a get way of life. I'll do something for you if you do something for me. Whereas the phrase that was originally used in the Roman Empire was a phrase, do ut des, D-O-U-T-D-E-S, which means, I give that you may give. In other words, my giving will help you give. And that's a little more in line with what we believe. There is a third Latin phrase, quidquid Latine dictum sit altum videtur, which means anything you say in Latin sounds more profound. The fourth point is we should be giving in our church, to our church family, in our church situation. You've all, many of you, at least most of you, have just come back from the Feast of Tabernacles, and you're still thinking about it. Feast of Tabernacles, if you had a good feast, it was because of the people who volunteered at the feast. That's the way it is. And it's not just people speaking or doing music. It's people who are doing parking, people who are setting up chairs, people who are making sure that restrooms are clean, people who are organizing events. And again, if you do not go to a feast and volunteer, you should ask yourself, why don't I? And, you know, there are good reasons. Sometimes we err on the side of volunteering too much. I remember when I had little kids, it was suggested to me by a man from another congregation. He said, you know, there's a very important word you should know, and that word is no. You're allowed to say it sometimes. And, you know, many of us have gone to feasts and overdone it where our families have suffered or other things. But at the same time, we should be giving in our church environment. The term servant leadership is a big one that comes up all the time. And servant leadership really is just another way of saying giving leadership. Real leadership is giving. And that's what servant leadership is. We don't want to get. And you have known in the past, because many of you have been in the church longer than I have, and I've been attending 40 years, you have known of situations where wrong-minded, wrong-spirited leaders have accrued things for themselves and where it's all been a get-type thing. I am very thankful, happy to say before God and the world that the ministers today, I don't know them as being that way, that they are very giving people. But we've had to learn lessons in a pretty hard way, you know, that serving means giving. That's what it's all about. And, you know, Mr. Thomas was just pointing out to us that the disciples argued about that, you know, that they had trouble with the getting and the giving. And Jesus Christ had to tell them the people who will be in the high positions are the ones who have served the most. That's just the way that it is. And the fifth point is, we need to give to God. And you think, well, how can we give to God? He gives us everything, and that's true. Let's turn to Acts 17. Acts 17 and verse 25. Again, Paul is talking. Paul talking covers most of the book of Acts. So if we're quoting a verse, it's probably Paul talking. But in Acts 17 and verse 25, he sums it up pretty well. Well, let's start in 24. I never start in the verse I tell you I'm going to start at. Verse 24, the God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples built by hands. Verse 25, and he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything because he himself gives all men life and breath and everything else. Now, those are the basics, aren't they? life and breath. Notice he didn't say food, he didn't say water, he didn't say housing, he didn't say Lamborghini. He said life and breath, and those are the basics. Everything else is gravy. We're alive and we're breathing. And if you've ever been seriously ill, or if you've lost people, and we all do because part of the human cycle is to die, you know how important it is to live and breathe. So first, we should be grateful for that, that God provides everything that we have. Let's turn to Psalm 104, which talks about God's liberality in conserving the earth. Psalm 104, how God is a giver. When he created the earth, he was very generous. I mean, he not only gave us all kinds of good things, but he gave us the capacity to enjoy them. Breathing feels really good. Eating feels good. Drinking feels good. All kinds of things feel good. And God has made, it's not just that he gives us things, we also get to enjoy them. That's amazing. Psalm 104, praise the Lord, O my soul. O Lord, my God, you are very great. You are clothed with splendor and majesty. He wraps himself in light as with a garment. He stretches out the heavens like a tent, lays the beams of his upper chambers on their waters. He makes the clouds his chariot and rides on the wings of the wind. He makes winds his messengers, flames of fire his servants. And then here's the things he's done. He set the earth on its foundations. It can never be moved. You covered it with the deep as with a garment. The water stood above the mountains, but, you know, nothing could live in that situation. But at your rebuke, the waters fled. At the sound of your thunder, they took to flight. They flowed over the mountains. They went down into the valleys to the place you assigned for them. This week, that was very important. Some of those waters broke out from those places. You set a boundary they cannot cross. Never again will they cover the earth. He makes springs pour water into the ravines. It flows between the mountains. They give water to all the beasts of the field. They give water. The wild donkeys quench their thirst. The birds of the air nest by the waters. They sing among the branches. He waters the mountains from his upper chambers. The earth is satisfied by the fruit of his work. He makes grass grow for the cattle and plants for men to cultivate, bringing forth food from the earth, wine that gladdens the heart of man, oil to make his face shine, bread that sustains his heart. The trees of the Lord are well watered, the cedars of Lebanon that he planted. There the birds make their nest. The stork has its home in the pine trees. The high mountains belong to the wild goats. The crags are a refuge for conies, rabbits or hyraxes or whatever they really are. The moon marks off the seasons. The sun knows when to go down. You bring darkness, it becomes night, and all the beasts of the forest prowl. The lions roar for their prey, and they seek food from their God. The sun rises, and they steal away. They return and lie down in their dens. Then man goes out to his work, to his labor until evening. How many are your works, O Lord? In wisdom you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. There is the sea, vast and spacious, teeming with creatures beyond number, living things both large and small. There the ships go to and fro, and the leviathan which you formed to frolic there. These all look to you to give them food at their proper time. When you give it to them, they gather it up. When you open your hand, they are satisfied with good things, but there's another side. When you hide your face, they are terrified. When you take away their breath, they die and return to the dust. When you send your spirit, they are created, and you renew the face of the earth. God is a giver. He made everything that anything has, whether it's air or water or food or houses. We all die and we leave the earth with exactly what we came into the earth with, nothing. And everything in between is something that God gives us. So we should be giving back to God. Now, you know, one of the interesting things about God's creation, I should say that I believe in the fossil record, the way that it's set out. I don't believe that, and our church officially doesn't believe that God made the world from nothing 6,000 years ago. We believe that God had a creation process. And my belief from following, here, thank you, Linda, for Kleenex. I'm about to have a nose malfunction. Very good. Is that he has made the earth beautifully, and he's given us all that we have. But if you look at God's creation, you see that it's made to get. What? The God of give made creation to get? Well, yes, it's true. You know, I used to have a pet crow. Micro didn't know about give. Micro knew about get. Micro liked to get things, shiny things sometimes, and take them back to his cage. If you have a dog, you know, dogs can give. They can give love and stuff like that. But trust me, there's a lot of get in a dog's life. They're doing certain things to get some things. I remember Linda Henderson at one point talking about horses, and I said, well, that horse is so friendly. And she said, yes, I have an apple. And I mean, that's how she summed it up. Yeah, the horse was really interested in her and thought she was wonderful. She had an apple in her hand. Well, you know, that's the way it is. The world that God made isn't just bunny rabbits and puppies. It's also alligators eating antelopes. You have to watch the whole nature show. You know, you can't just watch the selected one. Well, actually, you can. That's the glory of television. But the world has a lot to do with blood and killing and eating and claws and fangs and teeth and horrible violence. It has to do with that. And frankly, that is our nature. That's the way that we come into the world. You know, we want things. Now, humans have learned that giving is a very important thing, whether they know God or whether they don't. But the earth is a getting place, and that's the big struggle. God put us on the earth, and then he put man in a protected garden because he knew that the earth was a very violent, difficult place to live. And he made man to be different and to overcome that. And you may have not thought about it in those terms, but let's turn to Romans 8. And Romans 8 is couched in Paul language. Actually, it's couched in King James language generally. I'm not sure that it would have sounded this way, the way that Paul talked. But Romans 8 is about the battle between two forces in life. One is the spirit of life, and one is the law of sin and death. And then he simplifies those further into what? Flesh and spirit. But we could say that spirit is give. Spirit is looking at things and deciding to do it God's way. That's give. Flesh is doing it the way that we want. That's get. Let's see what Romans 8 has to say about that. This is the big struggle for all of us that we go through all our lives. And the closer we become to God, the more we are on the side of give. Therefore, there is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. That's the good news, because he has just said in the verse before that in his mind he is a slave to God's law, but by his nature he's a slave to the get way, the law of sin. Therefore, there is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus, who are living God's way, because through Christ Jesus, the law of the Spirit of life, give, set me free from the law of sin and death, get. For what the law was powerless to do, in that it was weakened by sinful nature, God did by sending his own Son in the likeness of sinful man to be a sin offering. God gave the ultimate sacrifice. He gave his best friend and his best companion and his very Son. And so he condemned sin in sinful man in order that the righteous requirements of the law might be fully met in us. There were things that had to be carried out for reasons that go beyond even just human lives, who do not live according to the sinful nature, get, but according to the Spirit, give. Those who live according to the sinful nature have their minds set on what that nature desires. But those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. The mind of sinful man is death, but the mind controlled by the Spirit is life and peace. The sinful mind is hostile to God, the get way of life. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. Those controlled by get cannot please God. You, however, are not controlled by get, but by give, if the Spirit of God lives in you. And if anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, he does not belong to Christ. And you understand that I'm substituting words here. But if Christ is in you, your body is dead because of get, that your spirit is alive because of give, righteousness. And if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead is living in you, he who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through his Spirit who lives in you. Therefore, brothers, we have an obligation, but it is not to sinful nature to live according to it. We have an obligation, but it's not to get. And if we do the give way of life, look what God does. He will give life to your mortal bodies through his Spirit who lives in you. God will outgive you no matter how you live. And it's because of his gift. get and give keep coming up in the way God does things. You know, in the book of Deuteronomy, God is writing for a carnal people. There were some, and by carnal, of course, I mean getting people. The Israelites were get people. Some of them turned into give people before they were done. And there were few of them to whom God was able to give his Holy Spirit and who were children of God. But these were quid pro quo people. They were people who gave so that they could get. And yet, you can tell that God was longing for more. If you turn to Deuteronomy and chapter 30, in chapter 29, he's talking about the ways that he will bless them for being his people and for serving him. And in Deuteronomy 30, God is almost wistful here. Deuteronomy 30 in chapter 1, when all these blessings and curses I have set before you come upon you, and you take them to heart wherever the Lord your God disperses you among the nations, and when you and your children return to the Lord your God and obey him with all your heart and with all your soul according to everything I command you today, that's the quid, here's the pro quo, then the Lord your God will restore your fortunes and have compassion on you and gather you again from all the nations where he scattered you. Do you remember in Solomon's kingdom, people would come to visit and just sigh because they knew they couldn't achieve anything that wonderful? That when God piled blessing upon blessing in the days of Solomon, that people just looked at his kingdom and said, there's no way we can do that. Nothing we do will ever amount to that. And that was totally earthly. That wasn't anything like the kingdom that we will know. In verse 9, then the Lord your God will make you most prosperous in all the work of your hands and in the fruit of your womb and the young of your livestock and the crops of your land. He's giving. The Lord will again delight in you and make you prosperous, just as he delighted in your fathers. If you obey the Lord your God and keep his commands and decrees that are written in this book of law and turn to the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. And if you think about the Ten Commandments, they are about the way of give. Now, verse 11, he's pouring out his heart. What I am commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. It's not up in heaven, so that you have to ask who will ascend up to heaven to get it and proclaim it to us so we may obey it. Nor is it beyond the sea, so that you have to ask who will cross the sea to get it and proclaim it to us so we may obey it. No, the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart so that you may obey it. God's saying, it isn't that hard. Please, please, please do it. See, 15, he's reasoning. Before he was commanding, now he's reasoning. I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. One of those comes from give, and one of those comes from get. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways. What a commandment to have to love somebody. And to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. And then he talks about the things that would happen if you don't. And in verse 19, he says, this day I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you that I have set before you two ways. Choose life so that you and your children may live, that you may love the Lord your God, listen to his voice and hold fast to him. For the Lord is your life and he will give you many years. He will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he is not just talking about 120 years of human life at that point. He's talking about giving people much more, but of course they don't understand it. We do, because God has opened up our hearts and minds. We have given our lives to God. We have his spirit, which is the spirit of give. We have God's impulses inside us, thanks to that spirit, and they're always fighting the get way. Sometimes the give way wins. That's when we're growing. Sometimes the get way wins. That's when we're sliding. But we have that, and so we can understand that God's whole purpose is to give life to a set of people who can be his family and his friends and who can help him to do things that we can't even consider. In Luke 12 and verse 32, this is the same person who was speaking in Deuteronomy, but he's on earth now, and he's in humbler form. He's going to give his life for all of us. He's going to give the ultimate. And the people around him just don't seem to get it. But in Luke 12, and verse 32. You know, many times he's chastised them. He's talked to them about things that they should do and should not do. And he's just given them the lilies speech. You know, look at the lilies. They don't work, but your Father gives to them. He's going to give to you also. You of little faith, don't worry about what you're going to eat or drink. Everybody in the whole world worries about those things, and your Father knows that you need them. And then he says in verse 31, but seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. So we're like quid pro quid. We give to give. We give, and God will give. And then he says, to crown it all off, and this is the Lord and creator of the universe, and the one who is going to return and establish his kingdom and set up peace and plenty and prosperity and goodness and give on the whole earth. It'll take a while for people to learn it, but this is that being speaking.